The Bleed Smart Sportscast is brought to you by SunMaxBatteries.com, the go-to website for all your battery needs. SunMaxBatteries carries a full line of super heavy-duty, ultra-alkaline lithium and button cell batteries. SunMaxBatteries compares in quality to well-known national brands, and the best part, SunMaxBatteries are priced much lower than their competitors. Flashlights, remote controls, gaming controls, headphones, digital cameras, hearing aids, smoke alarms, whatever device you need a battery for, SunMax has the best batteries at the best price for your device. You can order a 24-pack of AA or AAA heavy-duty batteries for only $5.99, or a 24-pack of ultra-alkaline, ideal for all kinds of gaming and high-tech devices, at just $12.99. Order today and use coupon code BOSTON at checkout. That's coupon code BOSTON, all uppercase, at checkout, and save 20% off your entire order. 20% off those already low prices. Once again, that's coupon code BOSTON, all uppercase, at checkout, and save big today. SunMaxBatteries.com, CellMaxBatteries.com, the official sponsor of the Wicked Smart Sports Guys. All right, welcome back to another episode of the Wicked Smart Sports Guys podcast. Thanks as always to Dolly Dreams for the intro music. This week, we got Jack Simone back on the pod. Why? Because Jack knows everything there is to know about the draft, seemingly. But Jack, even you seemed a little bit perplexed. I don't know if perplexed is even the right word. Dumbstruck, very surprised. You seemed, at the very least, I'll use the last adjective, disappointed with the Celtics draft pick. Juwan Bégarin, the French point guard, swing guard, however you want to say it, is who they took in the second round. And I know there were some players there that you preferred. So just go ahead and rant, Jack. Rant at the Celtics for making a pick that you didn't like.
I won't rant too much. I mean, I will say they managed to select one of the few players who I didn't know in the NBA draft, which, let me rephrase, there are only a few that I didn't know. I did my research this year. I knew most of the prospects, but Brad Stevens still managed to find one that I had no idea. I've watched some highlights. I've watched some tape, some film. I've done my due diligence. I'm not too upset with the pick because he's a draft and stash player. You know, I'm assuming that means Brad has other plans for the roster spots, and that only leads me to believe that maybe he's going to sign some veterans this offseason. So I put a nice little spin on it there. That being said, I think Sharif Cooper, Austin Reeves, you know, guys like that might have been a better pick if he was going for talent. But if the plan is to just sign veterans, then I suppose I can't complain too much.
And I know, was it B.J. Boston or Brandon Boston was another one that you would have preferred as well.
Yeah. Yeah, Brandon Boston would have been a nice pick. I mean, super athletic, super raw talent, I think, could develop. But if the Celtics are trying to win right now, Boston was not on my radar. But he's a high upside prospect, I'll say that.
Well, look, you talk about win right now, and the thing to me that sticks out about this move and another draft and stash player is, well, they want the roster flexibility, they want the roster spot. But to me, it's like, I don't see an immediate need for roster space. It's not like they're, you know, they're really like up against it with roster spots. I don't have it in front of me. I know that, but I there seemingly is going to be a lot going on this offseason. I don't know. Maybe there is something that's coming down the pipeline where they say, you know what, we can't bring in another rookie this year. I mean, to me, I feel like there are guys on this team. Maybe it would cost you some money. I don't know. I know the options and everything like that. I don't know if they've already decided on those, but like, it should be pretty easy for you to say, like, if you want a guy like Boston or
Austin Reeves.
Or Cooper. Mm-hmm. The idea would be, if you want a player like that, like, it should be easy for you to say, all right, like, we've seen enough of Carson Edwards, let's bring a guy like that in. So I was kind of disappointed to see it feels like, and who knows? Maybe they really like this guy. Of course, Ime Udoka coming from the Spurs, where they drafted a lot of international players. Maybe that has a lot to do with it, and maybe he'll be great. But after taking back-to-back draft and stash players in the second round, it feels like they're just taking a player they can stash so they don't have to give him a roster spot right now. And that's the idea behind the pick, or a large part of the pick, and that's why it kind of gets frustrating.
Yeah, that's definitely a way to look at it. I will say, I think some of those roster spots are going to go to players that the Celtics trade for using the trade exceptions. Because if you bring a guy on like that, it's most likely for just draft capital, and so you need an empty roster spot. And the issue with Carson Edwards is he's still under contract, so he would have to get traded in order to fill his spot. And I think well, I think that's probably likely. You don't automatically have that spot. And I will say, I've done my due diligence.
But don't they have an option? Don't they have a team option on him coming up that they can decline?
No, because he was a second round pick. So they signed him to a 4-year deal flat. So he's not, you know, the normal team option kind of guy. But I will say, I did my due diligence on Beguerin, or however you want to pronounce it. I'm probably butchering it, so I apologize. But I tweeted this out. Very brief research I did just now. Watched some film, read some reports. Obviously, draft and stash player. 7-foot wingspan for a 6'6 guard, which is, you know, really solid. Good defender, potential to be elite on that end. Raw playmaker, solid athleticism, and from what I've watched, very, very solid athleticism. He's an athletic freak. But he does need to improve as a shooter. And something I saw from Tom Westerholm and Chris Grenham, can create his own shot, just has to work on the shot form as a whole. So if he can develop, he could be something okay. I'm not keeping my hopes up right now, but I feel like the plan was find somebody that you could potentially develop moving forward while also keeping options open for free agency / you know, trades.
And I will say it's Keith Smith reporting that he's likely going to be a draft and stash here. So that is why we're assuming that is trusting Keith Smith there, that he's
likely Brad Stevens be. Quote. Brad Stevens said it's likely avenue that the Boston Celtics will stash Juwan Beguerin, according to Keith Smith. So
yeah,
there you go.
So yeah,
what you got.
And I mean, a lot of the things you said about him, I like. And again, I think there's an easy connection you can make to why they potentially made that move and decided to go in that direction. I don't know where they were all at. I because it seems like that they're still kind of the front office is still kind of scrambled going into this draft, which is obviously another concern that you might have. Is that, you know, they're still reportedly looking for a GM in, they're trying to bring Landry Fields in. Ime Udoka, who, you know, obviously not a part of the front office, but going to be in the room for these type of decisions as the head coach, with Team USA. So was he, you know, Skyping in or something? Who knows? I don't know. But what time is it in Tokyo right now? But, you know, I wouldn't put too much weight into that whole thing of like, well, you know, they were scrambling or anything like that. But it just feels like maybe they, if the draft was, let's just say, you know, it 2 months from now, or at a time where Ime Udoka wasn't otherwise occupied, and the rest of the front office wasn't otherwise occupied and looking to fill out the rest of the roster or the rest of the even group that they're putting together with the turnover there, I think that I would feel a little better about this pick and feel a little more encouraged. It feels like there's a lot else that they're worried about right now, and that concerns me.
Hey, I mean, one of those things they're potentially worried about is targeting Lonzo Ball, though, which I'm hyped about. I'm not hyped about who they would possibly have to give up, but that rumor gives me some faith, the fact that the Celtics are involved, because at the very least, it means they're poking around in that avenue, and I think Lonzo Ball would be a great fit with the Celtics. But off topic a bit, I'll admit, but I'm a big fan of Lonzo.
Yeah, we'll get into stuff like that. Obviously, we'll get into it. We can get into more of that right now, I suppose. We can wrap up the draft thing. I did want to touch on a few other draft notes, I guess, but we'll get to that later because I know there was some Celtics news that we should probably touch on first. But I guess I just want to know, like, if you had to give a grade for a pick, I know we said this was kind of out of nowhere. It wasn't something, a pick we were expecting or preparing for, and I know you were ready to give them an A if they could have taken one of those guys that we perceived to have fallen to them. But how would you assess this selection?
It's tough for me to grade, considering I quite literally hadn't heard of him until they selected it.
Yeah.
But I do firmly believe that the Celtics will fill those roster spots using the TPEs or offseason moves. So I'll give it like a C for now. I'm not going to give it an F because from what I've seen, he has the potential to turn into something great. But I'll give it a C right in the middle. I'm not, you know, obviously happy about it, but I'm also not, you know, it's not the end of the world. So I'm trying to say, and Austin Reeves did not get drafted. So they're handing out two-way contracts right now. Joel Ayayi signed with the Lakers, Dwayne Washington with the Pacers, you know, Aaron Henry with the 76ers. I'm just saying, if the Celtics want to get in on that, Austin Reeves, two-way contract for the summer league, I'm all in. I'm all in, Brad. Make it happen.
All right, well, let's get into some of the other notes, and I'm going to make you wait on Lonzo Ball because I want to start with Ricky Rubio, because there were reports earlier today that the Celtics were doing their due diligence on Ricky Rubio and potentially looking at a potential trade package that they could offer to the Timberwolves and secure him. And then just a few hours later, Rubio is dealt, but to the Cavaliers. What are your thoughts on the Celtics, supposedly, if they were interested, missing out on Ricky Rubio this offseason.
I'm not too upset about it. I mean, I think he would have definitely been a really solid player in Boston. But I do believe that this now means Colin Sexton is likely on his way out in Cleveland, and that's a player I'd much rather have than Ricky Rubio. I don't know what it would take to get a deal done, but Ricky Rubio for me was kind of like a guy where, you know, if the Celtics got him, great. If not, I'm not going to lose sleep over it. It's just like he makes a ton of money. He would have been great for playmaking, but at the same time, you know, spend that money elsewhere. Re-sign Evan Fournier, sign some veteran guys. I'm not losing sleep over Ricky Rubio.
I will just say it does feel like Rubio would have been a really, really good fit and like the perfect type of player for this team. I mean, people talk about the pass-first point guard thing, and you know, I think it gets overplayed a bit. I've talked to you about that before, and it's gonna be the same thing with Lonzo Ball, which we'll get into. But Rubio, a guy a bit more experienced, has never really played with a duo quite like Tatum and Brown. Never played with a scoring duo that dynamic. And so I think, especially with the need of point guard and the salary he makes and his experience as a starter, for all those reasons, I would have really, really liked Ricky Rubio in Boston. I think that for, you know, just for what they need right now and what they have that they can realistically offer and, you know, pay for a point guard, I think Rubio made a lot of sense, and it's unfortunate that they weren't able to get something done, because that's a guard that you could have gotten to me without giving up, you know, Marcus Smart or any of those, you know, really key guys that you wanted to hold on to. I think that a package of like Thompson, Romeo, and, you know, maybe a couple second rounders, maybe a future first, you might have had to do, but I think it wouldn't have taken much to pry Ricky Rubio away from the Timberwolves, and I think he would have fit nicely in the starting lineup.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, I think they could have gotten Rubio for less than that. I think they could have done something like Thompson in a couple seconds at most. But at the same time, I think the Timberwolves want the shooting they got in Torian Prince. They actually gave up extra assets in addition to Rubio to get Prince back. So that makes me feel like they wanted him a little bit. And at the same time, if you get Rubio back and you're not giving up Marcus Smart, which I'm not advocating for, that would be a terrible trade. But I'm talking in terms of salary. If you bring back Ricky Rubio and don't give up enough salary in return, then that's seriously affecting the ability to re-sign Evan Fournier this offseason. Because as of now, it's already pretty tricky to get it done under the hard cap and under the luxury tax, blah, blah, blah. So if you're adding an extra what? If you just traded Tristan Thompson for Ricky Rubio, you'd be adding an extra $8 million in salary. You know, that would just make re-signing Evan Fournier ridiculous.
Well, you couldn't do that anyway. You'd have to match the salary to, you know, whatever it is, 125%. So it would pretty much have to be Thompson and Romeo at least. And then maybe you have to, throw Grant in there or something to make the money work. I'm not sure. But, and I know that gets to be, you know, now you're starting to talk about you're trading 3-for-1 for Ricky Rubio when, you know, it's like, what are we really talking about with Ricky Rubio? But this is a guy that, as I just mentioned, this is someone that has experience starting in the league. And right now, the Celtics are kind of stuck between, they're just in a very difficult situation at point guard because, yeah, they can put Smart out there if they really want to. And by the way, Romeo and Thompson for Rubio straight up would have worked salary-wise according to the NBA trade machine. So, I know Romeo is a prospect you might not want to give up on yet. I personally wouldn't be having too many gripes about it considering what we've seen from Romeo so far. But I think considering the situation the Celtics turned a point guard, which is pretty much Marcus Smart, Peyton Pritchard, Carson Edwards, Jan Mader, and Smart is a player they usually like to play at the two. I don't know when the last time, Smart really only played consistently a point guard during his rookie season. Other than that, he's played during stretches. He's had spot starts there due to injuries, but he's mostly been a shooting guard for them ever since then. So, and I feel like it's almost an unnatural fit for him at this point. It just doesn't feel like the guy you want in that spot. So, for the experience alone, I would have really, really liked Ricky Rubio, and I personally would have done it. And I don't see much of an issue with the Fournier thing, you know, if it's Thompson and Langford for Rubio. And by the way, like, I get it, they should try to bring back Fournier. I hope they bring back Fournier. But as we've talked about before, and as you've mentioned before, even if they do and they go all out Fournier, I would say it's probably unlikely they get him because of the other suitors he's going to have across the league. So not making certain moves with that in mind could end up being a mistake.
I just think the Celtics have to make re-signing Evan Fournier the top priority this offseason. If they don't, I think it's panic mode regardless. So I just think that re-signing him, like I said, is a priority, and bringing in Rubio's massive salary would definitely affect that even more than it already is. Because like you said, I think there are other suitors out there that are dangerous. By the way, side note, I'm in shambles right now. The Lakers just signed Austin Reeves to a two-way contract, so I'm extremely upset. But anyways, yeah, I just think trading, and even past the salary, I think trading Romeo for Ricky Rubio would be a mistake too, because I think Romeo does have the potential to develop into an okay playmaker, solid on the defensive end. He needs to work on his shot. But at that point, you're talking about giving up, what, a 21-year-old, you know, potential prospect, Tristan Thompson, and picks for someone who is making $17 million, would affect the ability to re-sign one of your top scorers, and also would be off the book soon. I just think it's more important to retain Romeo with the opportunity to re-sign Fournier than it was to bring in.
Okay, but you're painting it in such a fashion that when you could be saying you're giving up a prospect that has shown you almost nothing in 2 years, that if I'm to project it right now, is never going to start in the NBA for a starter. You can probably re-sign Fournier if you want anyway, and you might not be able to in the first place if some other team comes along with a Godfather offer. So, like, you can paint it both ways. To me, like, I look at it and I say, just from this trade perspective, I know, you know, you keep hammering home the Fournier point. I think they could do it with or without Rubio. I still think they have the flexibility to do that. If you need to include Grant in there, go ahead and do it, because at the end of the day, do I think Romeo Langford or Grant Williams is going to be a reliable everyday starter in the NBA at any point in their careers? I honestly don't right now. So, and I know Ricky Rubio is that right now. So that's why, that's the only equation to me. That's all that matters really in that deal. And, you know, I personally, look, if it came down to it and I was like, well, I want to save money to potentially get Evan Fournier because, you know, so I'll include Grant. I wouldn't, because personally, I just think that that's the wrong move to make. I don't think you can afford to make moves or not make moves based on a hypothetical or a chance that something happens or anything like that. And I you know, but we've gone back and forth enough about that. I want to touch on a little more about something you said on Fournier. You said you think it'd be full panic mode if the Celtics can't re-sign Evan Fournier this offseason.
Yeah, I think so.
Why?
Because at that point, you're not only losing your, what, next year, if Evan Fournier is on the team, would you agree the fact that he's probably the third scoring option, right? That makes sense.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Behind Tatum and Brown, he's the third scoring option. Then you got guys like Marcus Smart and Al Horford. Al Horford's older now. I'm not saying he can't be a third scoring option, but that's probably not ideal on a playoff team. Marcus Smart has shown the ability at times that he can be a potential third scoring option, but I think it's consensus around, you know, the Celtics fan base that it's better if he's a primary playmaker and focuses on defense, right? Because he's very streaky. I'm not saying he can't get hot, but I'm saying he's a very streaky shooter. They lose Evan Fournier, it's not like they have, you know, the money to replace him. They just lose that money. The only reason they have the ability to re-sign him is because they have his rights, right? So you don't lose that and say, oh, that's okay, because then we can just spend that $13, $14 million elsewhere. No, you can only spend that on Fournier. So if you lose Evan Fournier this offseason, they don't have any money to sign anybody else or replace that scoring. So that's why I think it's full panic mode at that point.
Okay, let me ask you this. What do you think you need out of a third scoring option, points per game-wise, to, like, make a deep run, make the conference finals or something like that?
I think 15.
Okay, because the Clippers just made the conference finals and their third scoring option was getting 13 points per game, which I think Marcus Smart can do and has came close to doing, even with many, many superior offensive players surrounding him, or in front of him, I should say, throughout his career. His highest points per game was actually 13 last season, so for his career. So, look, I personally think, and the Clippers have been a comp for the Celtics for, you know, a couple years now, with the fact of Tatum and Brown profiling as a younger version of Paul George and Kawhi Leonard to an extent, and profiling as building a similar type of team. So I just think, like, I would, don't get me wrong, I would love Fournier back. I think he's really talented. I think he'd fit well on this team as a sixth man. I just don't think that I'm going to panic if they don't bring him back, because they still, at the end of the day, you still have two All-Stars on this team. You're building. I think that you have
other options besides that, depending on what you want to do. I mean, you briefly mentioned Colin Sexton there. If they want to make a run at him, you liked him better on the team. I don't know how I feel about Colin Sexton, but if you really want a third scoring option, that's definitely a guy that can score the ball. And they have, you know, some young players that should be able to step up in certain circumstances. Guys that showed some promise last season in Pritchard and Nesmith, who could make a little bit of a jump in year two. You mentioned Horford. If they can build the team the right way, I just don't think they're going to need Fournier's scoring to make a big run. You know, I think that they have Tatum and Brown can handle the offensive load in the same way that Leonard and George are able to handle the offensive load for the Clippers.
I'm just skeptical of, you know, the third scoring option. You mentioned the Clippers, right? And are you referring to Marcus Morris when you say the third scoring option was 13 points?
Yeah.
I mean, that discounts Kawhi Leonard's 30 points. And I know he got hurt, but he still played 11 games, which is over half the games for the Clippers in that run. And then, in addition, Marcus Morris scored 13 points on 37% from three, 43% from the field. Marcus Smart shot below 40% from the field and almost a career low, or not almost a career low, but not good from three this season. So if you're talking efficient scoring, if my third scoring option is getting an efficient 13 per night, I think that's very different from, you know, Marcus Smart being forced to be the third scoring option, because I don't think that role suits him perfectly. I just think you need that shooting that Evan Fournier brings next to Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And even if it's, you know, points on the board, whatever, but you need shooters. And I don't think the Celtics have enough shooters to lose Evan Fournier. They have potential shooters. I think Peyton Pritchard has shown the ability to be a reliable NBA shooter. I'm not saying that. I think Aaron Nesmith has shown the potential to be a reliable NBA shooter. But if we're talking about players on the Celtics roster that have shown time in, time again, that they can shoot the ball. And obviously he was on the Celtics for, 13 games. So I'm talking just in the grand scheme of the NBA. Evan Fournier has been a very, very efficient scorer, a very, very efficient shooter. And I think if you lose that and you lose Evan Fournier's production, I just think it puts the Celtics in a drastically worse position than otherwise.
So how much would you be willing to pay for Evan Fournier?
I'm not... Realistically, the Celtics can't pay that much. I think 13 to 15 million is a realistic ballpark for where they would end up paying if they can retain him.
And I know you think he's going to get more than that on an open market. I know you think that he's going to get a better offer than that.
I do. And I think the issue is, well, not the issue, but the situation will come down to, does Evan Fournier want to get a paycheck, or does Evan Fournier want to play with a chance to compete for a deep playoff run? Because he's gotten the paycheck before, right? The Magic paid him. He made some money, but he Magic didn't do anything. He made the playoffs a couple times. They got eliminated in the first round. And I think a big reason not that he had a choice, but, you know, based on his interviews, he was like, finally have a chance to compete in the playoffs. I finally have a chance to win. I like the situation in Boston. I think if he values that, then they have a really solid chance. Because while there are other teams that could be good, I think Boston is the best team that he could go to in terms of, you know, they have a chance to make a deep playoff run.
So I think that if you're Evan Fournier and you get a call from Dallas and you can play with Luka Doncic, and they're offering you significantly more money, which I would expect that they would, I would, if I was Fournier, I'd probably look at it and say, you know, I don't think my chances with Boston are so much better to go on a deep playoff run than Dallas that I would give up this money. I think that if I'm in Dallas for, you know, 3 or 4 years and I'm playing alongside Luka Doncic, I have a pretty good chance to make some noise in the playoffs there too. So, I mean, to me, it's starting to feel almost like a lost cause to with Fournier, and I'm honestly just not too worried about it. I think that if it, like, especially because I think that the flexibility that they'll have next season if they don't re-sign Fournier cap-wise could open a lot of different doors for them. And if they're able to, you know, figure out something to do with Horford's contract, whether they're stretching it, whether they're able to dump it for, and, you know, if they have to include a pick there, who knows what's going to happen with that whole situation. But the flexibility that could provide, who knows if it's going to be Beal or, you know, whoever else might be on the market that's available to them. I just think that that situation is potentially more valuable than Evan Fournier would be, because I just don't think Fournier is that game-changing type of player. I think he's really good. I think he could be a good third scoring option. I think that in a perfect world for the Celtics, an absolutely perfect world, he would average 17 or 18 points per game next to Tatum and Brown, but I don't think that's enough to sacrifice what you have to sacrifice to potentially re-sign him. And I don't think that, for a lot of reasons, I don't think that it works. But I'm not going to panic. I'm very content with where they're at team building wise. And I think that there are certainly red flags. I'm not going to, act like the merit of your argument isn't there, having lost, not only potentially Evan Fournier, but also Kemba Walker, who, while a lot of people were looking at that trade, and clearly Brad Stevens was eager to get off of his contract and everything else, whether it was the right move or wrong move to get rid of Kemba Walker, which you could say was the right move, either way, you're losing that scoring. And, if you had kept him around, you could have lost that scoring anyway, because he could have been deteriorated even more and not been the player he once was, and been even harder to trade and all that stuff. So I'm not saying that you shouldn't have done it. I'm just saying that no matter how you slice it, you're losing that scoring that he gave you last season. You're potentially losing Fournier's scoring on top of it. That creates a significant issue. And, I don't know. Something about the way that the team's built right now, it doesn't have me too concerned, because I just have that much trust in Tatum and Brown.
I think maybe panic was too harsh of a word. I would say I think not re-signing Fournier is the worst case scenario, which doesn't sound much better than panic now that I say it out loud. But panic implies that if the Celtics don't re-sign Fournier, I'm going to be over here, screaming, writing articles saying that they're not going to make the playoffs. No, they'll still make the playoffs if they don't re-sign Fournier. They'll still, be competitive. I just don't think they have nearly as... I don't think they have as high a ceiling without Fournier than they do with, which sounds pretty obvious. But I just think that that's the one, not all-star quality, but close to, 15 points per game, very efficient shooter, quality player that they can sign. So if they don't sign him, then that's a significant drop-off in talent. And in regard to the Dallas thing, they're reportedly going to be spending a lot of money on Tim Hardaway Jr. this offseason, which is going to take a huge cut into their cap space. So that might pull them out of the race for Evan Fournier. With that being said, I do think that the Miami Heat are a team to watch if they don't end up landing a Kyle Lowry or a Lonzo Ball. And I think even past that, the New York Knicks are another team that I think could be a sleeper team to sign Evan Fournier, because they have a ton of cap space. They need scoring, they need shooting next to RJ Barrett and Julius Randle, and I think he would be a good fit there as well. But I think that Celtics need to prioritize bringing Evan Fournier back. If they don't, it is what it is. Brad Stevens will figure something out. Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have a fine future ahead of them. Brad Stevens was just quoted saying, he'll look to find players to quote unquote help our young roster grow. So I'm hoping that he brings in some vets, and I'm hoping Evan Fournier is one of those vets. But like you said, if not, they'll still be competitive. I just think it's worst case scenario this offseason that they don't re-sign.
Okay, so I want to circle back, because you mentioned Colin Sexton. Do you think there's a chance that they make a real run at Colin Sexton?
So the speculator, if that's a word, I think that's a word in me, says yes, because I think it would be foolish not to. You have a young all-star quality player that would fit into a TPE, so you don't necessarily need to match salary, that you could bring in to pair with your other two young all-star players. So I think it would be just silly for Brad Stevens not to at least inquire about it. Do I think they'll be one of the top suitors? No. I think the Heat have the best chance, honestly, and that's not biased, because they would probably be willing to take on Kevin Love's contract in order to bring in Colin Sexton, because Love could start for the Heat right now because they don't have power forward. I think other teams around the league, the Thunder, I know, are interested in Colin Sexton, and they could probably put together a good package with their draft picks. I think the Knicks always are going to inquire about stuff because they have the cap space. They probably have some assets. I think the Celtics can certainly make a run at it. I think they could probably offer something along the lines of, Romeo, future first round picks, and I don't even know, Marcus Smart might have to be included. I'm not saying I would or wouldn't do that, but if the Cavs ask for something, they'll probably be asking for Marcus so they can, have a mentor for the young guys. But I would at least ask about Colin Sexton. But realistically, I don't see a trade to the Celtics happening, although it would be very funny, full circle Kyrie trade. But yeah, that's what I think about the situation.
Right, yeah, of course. So, well, that was interesting. I just wanted to touch base on that. All right, before we get out of here, we were going to do draft, then we get roped into all this other stuff, of course, talking about the Celtics. But I do want to talk about some other things involved with the draft. I just have a couple things I want to run past you. The first one I guess I want to ask you about is Scottie Barnes over Jalen Suggs. How do you feel about that, and do you question it all from the Raptors? Because, It feels like the Raptors right now, their forward situation is pretty, you know, pretty much where you'd want it to be. If you're Toronto, you should seemingly be pretty content with it. OG Anunoby and, you know, Pascal Siakam. And I understand drafting the best player available, but it felt like for a lot of reasons, Suggs made so much sense for that team, especially with Lowry likely gone this offseason. So what did you make of the Scottie Barnes over Jalen Suggs pick?
So I was on FaceTime with my girlfriend Zoe for the first few picks of the draft, and she heard me scream at my TV in disgust because that was a absolutely horrendous pick from the Toronto Raptors. I don't know how you could pass up on Jalen Suggs at four. I think it's amazing for the Magic that he slid to five. I think he's going to be a better player than Scottie Barnes. I'm not saying Scottie Barnes is going to be a bad player. I think the comparison to Draymond Green that they made on the broadcast was spot on. I think he can be a really good player for them. I just think they're losing out, you know, they're very much losing out on a replacement for Kyle Lowry and Jalen Suggs when they already have, like you said, OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam in the front court. I just think it was foolish. I don't know how you can pass up on Jalen Suggs there at four. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, and I really liked Suggs throughout the process. And I thought in you know, college, you know, I understand the reasons that he wasn't in that group of those top three guys. But I thought he showed tremendous effort. I thought he showed great vision. He showed, you know, even a clutch ability at times, which obviously is something that is hard to equate argue that transfers to the NBA level. But there was a lot of leadership that was shown on his part that you had to have liked. And I personally don't understand the move for Toronto either. I think that from the Magic standpoint, if I was the Magic, and I've been kind of consistent on this as much as I have been for the Raptors, I would be a little bit, I would have seller's remorse a little bit, because I still think they shouldn't have given up on their core when they did. I think if they had, they were in a bad position at the time of the trade deadline anyway. I think they could have gotten a pick this high if they had just stuck it out with the roster they had. Maybe you rest some guys a few days to get a worse pick, whatever. We've seen NBA teams that are doing bad do this all the time. So I don't think that would have affected their draft position too much. And just let's just, you know, play this game where they still get Jalen Suggs and have that roster, which, you know, around them, which, you know, who knows how the lottery would have worked out. This is all the butterfly effect, hypotheticals, whatever. But they could have had this high of a pick if they'd kept the roster anyway. That's the point I'm going to make. And that's to say that they could have had Suggs, Fournier if he resigns, Isaac, Gordon, and Vucevic. And then, of course, you still have the problem that Gordon and Isaac don't really fit together. But that's a good starting lineup. And I really feel like it was a mistake for them to sell off when they did. I know those guys were older. I know maybe it'll be better if they just decide to, you know, scrap down, rebuild, go young. But the Magic are a team that's been trying to do that since Dwight Howard left, reverse course a little bit once they got Vucevic and he started doing well. But I don't know. I think that their team would be much better off today if they hadn't made those trades at the deadline and they still had Suggs.
See, I agree with your philosophy there, but I believe in a different philosophy than you, I think, because I think teams like the Pacers and teams like the, I'm trying to think of another example, the Pacers are just perfect, are stupid, right? You fight for this playoff spot, you try to be competitive, but it's very clear that the Indiana Pacers are not going to win the championship next year. And if they do, clip this, you know, send me into oblivion for years to come. But it's very clear in my head, and I would assume you feel the same, that the Indiana Pacers are not going to win the NBA championship.
I actually feel the same way. I'm just kidding.
Okay, I was going to say. But yet, they're still doing everything year in and year out to try and compete, right? I think if the Magic did that, they'd have, yes, a much, much better roster right now. But it wouldn't be a championship roster, right? Nikola Vucevic is great. Evan Fournier is great. Aaron Gordon is great. But that trio alongside Isaac and Suggs is not going to win you a championship. Meanwhile, you trade Vucevic. You get the Bulls pick, which turned into Franz Wagner, who I love, by the way. You get Jalen Suggs still because you tank, and I don't think they would have been in the position to get Suggs if they had kept their roster. Excuse me, I think they would have.
I mean, they were still 14th in the East when they traded those guys. They were 14th in the East of the trade deadline.
Yeah. I just think...
And by the way, Vucevic didn't do much for the Bulls in the standings either, so I don't know if, you know...
True. I'm just saying, I would much rather have Suggs, Franz Wagner, Cole Anthony, Jonathan Isaac, Markelle Fultz, Wendell Carter Jr., who they got in that trade, moving forward, because I think that has the potential to be a framework. I'm talking way down the line here. Suggs, Franz Wagner, and assets they get in return for trades, etc. I think they could be competing for a championship with that framework. Meanwhile, I think...
Okay, so stop for a second. Stop for a second. Okay, because like 80% of the guys you mentioned, they still could have had if they had kept those guys around. They would have still had Cole Anthony. They would have still had Jonathan Isaac. I'm going to stick by that. I still think they could have got Jalen Suggs based on where they... We're in the standings at the time.
Yes, but they would not have room to develop, and I think that's huge because they'd be playing under people so much that it doesn't matter. Like, you look at Mo Bamba, right? You can say, oh, he was a boss, blah, blah, blah. Mo Bamba never even got a chance. Let's be real. Mo Bamba never, ever, ever got a chance to develop. And I'm not saying he would have been, you know, this demigod starting center if he did, but he just simply did not get the chance to even try.
I think kind of thing is a little bit overrated, because Jaylen Brown went to a situation where there were a lot of players ahead of him. There were a lot of players better than him. He was a prospect who played on a really good team, who was supposedly getting blocked by the players, and he still developed. And Kawhi Leonard went in a situation like that, and Giannis wasn't playing a lot early on in his career. And I just think that guys are able to develop even if they're not getting a ton of playing time. Like, that's, and if they're good, they're going to be good, and if they're not, they're usually not. Like, I don't think Mo Bamba's career would have been drastically different if he had went to, you know, the Cavaliers or, you know, the Thunder, some bad team at that time of the draft, you know, whatever. But, I'll say that my philosophy, but your general point about the whole thing of the Magic, if they kept that core together, Jalen Suggs, they're still not a championship team. I agree with, but I think that one of the things that Zach Lowe has said, and I've kind of adopted and agreed with, is that mediocrity in the NBA is kind of underrated, and not mediocrity to the point where you're like the Pistons or where the Pacers were last year, like, or where the Pistons were a few years ago, I should say, where you're just teetering every year, 8 seed and you're getting swept, or you know, 9 seed and you're missing the playoffs like barely every year. Not to that point, but if you're a team that's like fifth or sixth every year, and every once in a while you make a run like the Trailblazers, like being the Trailblazers over the last decade or even decade and a half, you could say, is underrated. You know, it's really, not every team's going to win the championship. Not every team's going to get LeBron James. Not every team's going to get Giannis. And if you don't have one of those guys, you're not winning an NBA title. And just because you can't doesn't mean you should strip it down to the studs every single time and then build it back up until you finally are that team. I think that being a playoff team year in and year out is a fine existence for an NBA team. It's something that you have to accept to a certain extent, especially if you're in certain markets and under certain situations. And I just think if I was the Orlando Magic and I had that core and I added Jalen Suggs to it, for the next 5 years, I would feel like I'm a lock for the playoffs in the East virtually every single season. And I feel like, I understand this is kind of a sad, you know, kind of a existence and sort of a tough thing to accept, but if I'm the Magic, like, that has to be good enough for me.
I think we can agree to disagree, but the last thing I'll say is, one, you're comparing the Magic to the Trailblazers, who have Damian Lillard, and the Magic don't have anybody who comes close to Damian Lillard, who has willed that team to runs. And also, you've argued against yourself a little here, because you say, I think if they kept the core of Vucevic, Fournier, etc., Gordon, they still would have gotten Suggs. But then at the same time, you're arguing that a team with that core would be able to compete for the playoffs every year.
Well, I think it was a weird year, and they've had good runs before, but this season it wasn't working.
Have they?
Well, they've had decent seasons, is what I should say. They made the playoffs a couple years in a row. They've
squeaked into the playoffs to get swept.
Okay, but that's what I'm saying. But that's what I'm saying is, you add a player like Suggs, who we both think can be very good. I think can be a potential star in the NBA.
Yes.
You add him to that lineup, and then there's your star that you need. There's the guy that can actually turn into the player that leads your team, and you have a great supporting cast around it.
I guess. I think I just personally like the mold of, you know, give Suggs the keys, get Wagner as well from that trade, let the young guys shine and let them turn into something. That I think that's just the mold I personally prefer to go with if I'm the Magic, but we can agree to disagree.
I mean, there's an argument for it, and look, hope springs eternal, so you can, I mean, and you can say, like, oh yeah, they got these young players and I really like them and I really like Franz Wagner, but like, Franz Wagner's chances of being what Evan Fournier has been in the NBA are like probably a little less than 50-50 at best. Hey,
I think Wagner has Gordon Hayward upside. I think that's where he can
look. He might. You could be absolutely right. But the reality of the NBA is with prospects, it's very, very hit or miss, and it's not even a 50-50 proposition. So like, the Magic fans can all hope that he's going to be this great game changing player, but the odds of that happening are very slim. And it's kind of like, you know, you looking a gift horse in the mouth or thinking the grass is greener on the other side. It's usually not. And I think that what you're saying ultimately is what you probably have to do in the NBA, because those jerseys will sell more than Evan Fournier's jerseys because people will get excited because it's new and flashy and this guy could be anything, you know, all this stuff. But ultimately, I think that there's another argument to be made that, hey, if you're trading away good players just because you're hoping your team can be even better, that's where you might start to eventually lose your job.
Hey, I think we can agree to disagree. I think another reason that maybe this is to your point, I think another reason that the Magic have been so unsuccessful was Steve Clifford. I think Jamal Mosley is going to do a great job, and I think if they had kept that around, or I'm sorry, brought in Mosley with that older core, because he would have also given the young players a chance to sign, because Clifford doesn't let young players play. So I think if they had brought Mosley and brought in a fresh head coach in with the core, maybe they could have competed for a better playoff seed once Suggs did develop. But agree to disagree.
I mean, there is something to be said for the fact, can you agree, there's something to be said for the fact that if they have Suggs in there with that core, that's the best team the Magic have had in a decade.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's nothing to turn your nose up at.
Yeah, I agree. But I also think that this young core they have now, who is going to get a chance to, you know, grow together, also has a chance to be the best core that the Magic have had in a while.
It could. It's just going to take a lot longer. It's probably going to take a lot longer, and they're going to have to get lucky in a few more drafts.
But now they have the opportunity to. I don't think they'd have the opportunity to get, you know, a top five pick in the next couple drafts if they had Vucevic, because they probably would be too good.
They wouldn't, but it's ultimately all about the way the ping pong balls fall, you know? If it could be that, you know, come up 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever their combination will be, and then they win the number one pick, and all of a sudden it's perfect, that's what you did this for, all that, or their lottery luck could not work out, which, by the way, is what's happened to the Magic every single year that they've tried to do this. It's been Aaron Gordon, it's been Jonathan Isaac, which, you know, some of those, they've been okay. They've ultimately, you know, they drafted actually like okay, but they've never gotten the star. They've never gotten the star from the draft. They've never gotten high enough. They've never really won the lottery. They got to second once in that stretch, and it was one of the worst draft lotteries, if not the worst draft lottery of the 21st century. Like, it, you know, it was the Anthony Bennett year is the year they got second, and they got one of the better players in that, in Victor Oladipo. So again, they've, under circumstances, they've drafted well. They've just never gotten lucky enough. It's never fallen their way. And that's why I think of all the teams, the Magic should be the one that look at it and say, maybe this isn't the game we should be playing. But we've said agree to disagree enough, so we will just do that at this point. Last thing I want to touch on before we get out of here is the Pistons draft, because it is 1:30 a.m. But I want to know what you think of the Pistons draft, because they ended up doing pretty good just besides Cade Cunningham. I mean, look, you can argue what you want about Luka Garza and saying that, you know, he might not be an NBA player, and he might not be, but to get him in the second round and to get the Michigan man they got, that now his name's slipping my mind as well, but to get him in the second round as well, and Isaiah Livers, they didn't do bad with their second round picks, and they already did really well last year in the draft to give Cade a good supporting cast to jump into, and I think they did pretty solid this time around too. The Mason Plumlee trade, a bit confusing to me. I'd love to hear what your thoughts on that are, especially speaking from the Hornets' perspective a little bit. But, you know, as far as their picks are concerned, I think they did very well.
Yeah, I think the Pistons had a good draft. Obviously, Cade was undoubtedly the number one overall pick. I think Luka Garza has the chance to be a decent center in the NBA. I mean, you know I'm a Charlotte guy, so I love that Mason Plumlee trade. I absolutely love the Mason Plumlee trade. But from an unbiased perspective, which I know is hard to say since I just said I was a Charlotte guy, I think the Hornets had one of the best drafts of the night, and I don't think it's that close. I think they're up there with, you know, the Rockets potentially and the Pistons. They got Book Knight at 11. They got Kai Jones at 19, who they were targeting at 11, and they got JT Thor with the 37th overall pick, and they got Scottie Lewis too. But those top three guys are really who I'm focusing on. But yeah, the Pistons, I think they did a great job. I think taking a flyer late in the second round on Luka Garza is going to turn out really well for them. I think he'll play well in the summer league. Sorry, I blanked for a sec. And obviously Cade Cunningham, like I said, generational talent, going to be amazing. Said on the JJ Redick podcast, he wanted to make the playoffs year one with Detroit. Skeptic here, but you know, you never know how good Cade's going to be coming out the gate.
Yeah, and the Plumlee trade, is there like was there a report on why the Pistons did that in the first place? Was it just a cap space? Like, I still haven't seen an explanation from the Detroit side.
From the rumblings I'm hearing, seeing everywhere, it's they wanted to shed cap space. Does that make sense to me? No, considering they're not paying anybody, but that's the only logical explanation I can make of it. I don't know why, because I think Mason Plumlee was great for the Pistons last season, but as a Hornets guy, I'm absolutely ecstatic that that's who they managed to get. And they got JT Thor out of it too. So basically traded, what'd they end up trading? They traded Balsa Koprivica for Mason Plumlee and JT Thor. That's an amazing, amazing trade, for the Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah. And also, I wanted to ask you about the pick that Charlotte sent to New York in that deal. What were the protections on that pick? Because I was interested to see that. I didn't get to see it, but it got lost in the shuffle for me. Have they revealed what the details on that future pick they traded to the Knicks for 19 was?
They did, and it's going to take me a second to find it. It's very, very, very protected. Basically, in the next few years, it's going to be protections on the pick. 2022, it's protected 1-18, 23, 1-16, 24, 1-14, 25, 1-14. And after that, if it does not convey, it is just 2 second round picks. So basically nothing.
So to me, yeah, that's crazy, because if you're the Knicks, it's another move where it feels like Charlotte's just taking advantage of a team that's trying not to compromise cap space or trying to save cap space or what have you, because maybe the Knicks are like, well, we want to preserve all our cap space for this offseason because we have big plans. But to me, when I saw the trade and when the trade first came across, I thought, well, you know, this makes sense for the Knicks. You know, if they, because the drafts are supposed to get better in the coming years, especially if the double draft happens where they start allowing high school players in. So, you know, this makes sense from the Knicks' perspective to, hey, put this pick off for a future pick. And if I were to guess the protections, I would have said, you know, it obviously at least top four, maybe top eight, you know, would make some sense. But I mean, I was interested to see where the protections lay, because it could have been anywhere, you know, to trade for one pick. You're just trading one pick for another. And to trade the 19th pick now, and again, this is like the bird in hand, the 19th pick right now for a future pick, you'd think you'd be getting some looser protections because, hey, you know, this pick, you have to wait a year or two for this pick. So, you know, yeah, you if it's the 12th overall pick, you know, that's the price you pay to draft now versus draft later. It's insane to me that they gave up this pick and next year cannot even get a better pick than the one they had this year. Not even possible with the protections on it. And then they just, they don't loosen up that much either, you know, in the next few years. So that's, I'm sure they'll eventually get it, because I think Charlotte's trending upward and they're going to make the playoffs at some point here. Yep, yep. But that, to me, is just absolutely ridiculous. I don't understand why the Knicks decided they wanted to do that. I'll add to the praise of the Hornets for their draft night then, because that is, I don't understand how they were able to take advantage of these teams. But, you know, just besides the draft, getting Plumlee too, a great night for them. So, all right, Jack. Well, that's about all we can do. It's past 1:30. We've already gone longer than I think either of us expected to go. But thank you for coming on, obviously, late night podcasting after the draft. I would say one of the more mundane drafts. It felt like, just kind of, a 2K simulated draft. Like, it was just kind of like, yeah, it is the draft, you know, in a my league or something. It didn't feel, I think, as exciting as some other years felt. I think there was also an element of, there was a lot of buildup. It was a really busy day across all of sports, baseball, basketball, mainly. And I think that it got to the draft, and you knew Beal wasn't being traded. After hearing the Simmons offers, you kind of knew he wasn't going to be traded. And it just felt kind of, you know, just meh a little bit, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, very weird. Very nothing. I mean, some of the players that fell, like Sharif Cooper falling to second round was wild. Jalen Suggs at 5. But overall, like you said, just a very boring draft, I guess. Entertaining. I always love the draft. You know me. But yeah, I completely agree.
All right, Jack. Well, once again, thank you for coming on. Guys, go follow Jack at Jackson1NBA and check out all his stuff, Hornets, Celtics, Heat, all that stuff. You're going to be a busy guy the next couple of days sorting through all this draft stuff is what the,
yes, sir.
The bottom,
yes,
line is. How late are you planning on staying up tonight? It's already 1:35, so.
I'm probably going to hit the hay very soon. I got to write a little bit tomorrow. I've written some stuff today already, but yeah, busy day tomorrow, so probably going to knock soon and get to work tomorrow.
All right, Jack, get some rest. Once again, thank you for coming on, guys. Go check out Jack at JacksonNBA. Follow also at Bannertown USA, other site for all the Celtics coverage over there. And Jack, I'll just say one more time, thanks for coming on as always.
Of course, yeah, love it. Thank you for having me.
All right, guys, you can follow me on Twitter at @ByKDoyle. Follow the pod on Twitter at @WickedSmartPod. Check out everything over at Guy Boston Sports. Go to GuyBostonSports.com. Go to the YouTube channel. I'm tired. I feel like I'm barely awake at this point. This is just, I'm in a really weird state. But thank you guys for listening. Thanks for, you know, tuning in for our little draft recap here. And we'll see you next week. Peace.